Hi, this is Mark Stein. Welcome back to our special audio edition Song of the Week, a musical cavalcade, 44 presidents in 44 songs, plus a couple of detours as our President's Day special. We got music by everyone from Doris Day to James Brown, Cole Porter to Sheryl Crow, Jimmy Cagney to Jay-Z, plus a couple of presidential performances by Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. Let's see, where did we get to in part one? Oh yeah, we covered everyone from George Washington up to the 22nd president, Grover Cleveland. So let's pick up where we left off. Let's put Grover over again. I said in part one we weren't going to have any campaign songs, and that's the reason that one sounds so good, because it's not a real campaign song, but one written for a motion picture. The 1888 election is the only presidential contest to have been used as the backdrop to a musical, to wit the Walt Disney film, the one and only genuine original family band. I'd love to have been in the studio meeting where that one got pitched. It's 1968, and the guys come in to tell you, okay, get this, it's a musical version of the Grover Cleveland Benjamin Harris showdown. The movie had just about everyone you'd expect to find in it for a Disney picture in those days. Walter Brennan, Buddy Ebsen, Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn, John Davidson, Leslie Ann Warren, looking absolutely lovely, all pressed into service to tell the story of the Bauer family band, a three-generation musical family trying to get to the 1888 Democratic Convention in St. Louis to perform their campaign song for President Cleveland, put it over with Grover. And then for various complicated reasons, they wind up instead somewhere in the Dakotas. And in an odd way, for a Disney film, it does actually address a serious political issue, because the issue in the 1888 election campaign from the Dakotas' point of view was whether the territory, the Dakota Territory, was going to be one state or two. In other words, whether it would wind up, as the Democrats saw it, with merely two more Republican senators or four more Republican senators. It's a kind of pretty abstruse premise on which to build a Disney movie. But it actually is it's a lot of fun, and the pastiches are affectionate. They were written by the Sherman brothers, Richard M. and Robert B. Sherman, the Disney songsmiths who gave us Mary Poppins and the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang score and a lot of other great stuff over the years. And their song, the song they wrote for Grover Cleveland, Put It Over With Grover, I mean, in a way that plays safe, in the way that incumbents seeking re-election do. Don't rock the boat, give him your vote. But for the GOP candidate, the Shermans faced an entirely different kind of challenge, in that they had to find something, not just something to say about Benjamin Harrison, but they also had to find a rhyme for Benjamin Harrison. And the one they came up with is Pure Delight, because it is entirely at odds with his subsequent obscurity.
Oh, Benjamin Harrison, he's far beyond comparison. He'll keep the land a garrison of life and liberty.
Benjamin Harrison, he's far beyond comparison. He'll keep our land a garrison of life and liberty. The song for the Republican candidate in the Sherman Brothers score for the one and only genuine original family band. Just for the record, Benjamin Harrison is the grandson of William Henry Harrison, the ninth president, who served just 30 days and then died, and Harrison, grand fils, at least made it through a single term. In a way, you're not surprised to find, say, the Adamses producing a brace of presidents, but there's something appealingly American and Republican, I think, about an all-but-forgotten family producing not one but two unknown presidents. The latter Harrison had electricity installed in the White House, and it was said that he and the First Lady were so terrified of electrocuting themselves that they dared not touch the switches and thus often slept with the lights on. Didn't seem to do the Republic much harm. Incidentally, the Sherman brothers' dad was the author of a real presidential campaign song. When Thomas Dewey ran against Truman in 1948, he co-opted as his theme a very modest hit from 1927 called A Doo-Doo-Dewey Day, which was co-written by Al Sherman. The 23rd president was succeeded by the 22nd president. That's to say, Grover Cleveland ran again in 1892, and this time he won, making himself the only two-term president with a four-year intermission. And as the historians count him as both the 22nd and 24th chief executive, so shall we. And for his first presidency, in part one, we chose There's a Small Hotel. So for the 24th, let's pick a song that's as far from Rodgers and Hart as you can get. The hippity-hopper Jay-Z leads the usual full life that one has come to expect from the rap chaps. He's married Beyoncé, he's been charged with stabbing a record company executive, etc., etc. But along the way, he still finds time to record the odd CD. And if you've ever asked yourself, what's the connection between Grover Cleveland, Mariah Carey, and Nicole Richie, it's this. They're the only three real people cited in Jay-Z's song Anything. If I get the cut of his jib in this number, the setup is that he's watching a young lady demonstrate her terpsichorean skills, or as he says, ooh, you so nasty amateur pole dancing. And he's showering her with cash, being apparently flush with the folding stuff, all with the object of enticing her back to his mirrored ceiling pad to pleasure her on a bed covered in $1 million. I think this is a scenario we could all relate to. Take it away, Jay-Z. Like, you know you had to cry. You throw that body, I throw the dimes, but not the ones and not the fives. Have you ever seen us grow to Cleveland? It's $1,000 bill, baby. Girl, hey, I bet you never seen it like this. Have you ever seen a Grover Cleveland? That's $1,000. That's Jay-Z sweet-talking the object of his affection. And they say romance is dead. So where do Mariah Carey and Nicole Richie fit into the scenario? Here it is. Jay-Z got notes like Mariah. Got no ones, got no vibes. My D notes are higher. I'm a D-boy, they decoy. They money is lighter. Nicole Richie, roll with me. They on the diet, baby. Grover Cleveland, Mariah Carey, and Nicole Richie, all in one song by Jay-Z. The 25th president, William McKinley, was assassinated almost one century to the day before 9/11, September the 6th, 1901, at the Pan American Exhibition in Buffalo. And despite the presence of at least 50 Secret Service agents, police officers, and other guards, America's head of state was shot by a man who simply stood in the receiving line and waited his turn. Leon Czolgosz was an anarchist, anarchists being to the dawn of the 20th century what terrorists are to the dawn of the 21st. There was a tremendous outpouring of grief when McKinley died, and several mournful ballads were written in memoriam. But there was another song too. It was written presumably fairly close to the actual events, but precisely when is not clear. I believe the earliest written reference to it comes from Eleanor Fargen, the composer of Morning Has Broken, as recorded by Cat Stevens, now Yusuf Islam. In April 1915, she spent a Sunday evening with D.H. Lawrence, at which he sang for her several Negro spirituals, but also, quote, set our brains jingling with an American ballad on the murder of President McKinley with words of brutal jocularity sung to an air of lilting sweetness, unquote. A few weeks later, she taught the tune to a member of the Shackleton South Pole expedition to entertain Sir Ernest and the lads in camp of an evening while they were sitting around shivering. D.H. Lawrence was evidently very fond of the ballad. Mary Lalaby Fisher, who was a pupil of his in 1915, recalled that he liked to teach her some of his favourite numbers. Quote, the two that stand out in my memory are the old traditional English song Barbara Allen and a song from America about the assassination of President McKinley.
Oh, Joggles, Joggles, you cruel young man, you just shot President McKinley with a handkerchief on your hand. Now he's bound to die, he's bound to die. Well, McKinley did holler, McKinley did squall, and the doctor came in, but he couldn't find that ball. Said, you're bound to die, you're bound to die. Well, McKinley lay dying, he just thought about his wife. He said, careful how you tell her that I've lost my life in Buffalo, in Buffalo.
Yeah, a lot of facts in that song. Chogosh did make it appear as if he'd injured his hand, and he bandaged it with his handkerchief under which he concealed the weapon. And it's also true that the doctors poking around in McKinley couldn't find the actual ball.
Well, Mrs. McKinley took a trip out to the West. She just felt so blue about her husband's death in Buffalo, in Buffalo. She said, Zogos, you rascal, don't you see what you just done? You shot my loving husband with an Ivor Johnson gun. Now he's bound to die, now he's bound to die.
What happened to that song over the years is that it became a big kind of bluegrass favorite, and people started playing it faster and faster and faster. So, in fact, it became harder and harder to hear what this song was actually about.
The trial was speedy, the trial was fair, and they sentenced him to die in that new electric chair in Buffalo, in Buffalo. Now buckle up. Now Roosevelt's in the White House drinking from a silver cup, and McKinley's in the ground. He ain't never waking up, and he's gonna be gone a long, long time.
Roosevelt in the White House drinking out a silver cup, McKinley in the graveyard, he'll never wake up. Teddy Roosevelt would seem the size of man who would prompt a slew of songs. Aside from anything else, he's the origin of the term teddy bear, after a 1902 hunting expedition in which over-anxious flunkies seized a bear, clubbed him to a pulp, tied him to a tree, and then invited the president to shoot him. Roosevelt declined, and the ensuing cartoon, Teddy's Bear, spurred a marketing boom. So in theory, we could drop in Elvis's Teddy Bear, or even the Teddy Bear's Picnic, co-written by Jimmy Kennedy, author of one of our early songs of the week, Istanbul, not Constantinople. But that doesn't seem quite fair. So how about a song that references the bears that Teddy declined to spare? This is an Irving Berlin novelty number from 1910, as you can tell from the rhymes with the references to spoony songs and coony songs, those two being two of the dominant genres of the day. This is Sophie Tucker.
Out in San Francisco where the weather's fair, they've got a dance out there they call the Grizzly Bear. All your other loving dances can't compare. Not so spoony, but a little more than coony. Talk about your bears that Teddy Roosevelt shot. They can't compare with what old San Francisco's got. Listen, my honeydew, and I'll show to you the dance of the grizzly bear. Hug up close to your baby. Throw your shoulders towards the sea. Lordy, what a feeling. Hug up close to your baby. Shoot behind a night at 7. Hug up close to your baby. Sway me everywhere. Show your darling beau just how you go to Buffalo. Doing the grizzly. Ah, doing the grizzly.
show you, darling Bo, just how you go to Buffalo. So that song even returns us to the scene of President McKinley's assassination. I think Irving Berlin is trying more to evoke Niagara honeymooners rather than murderous anarchists. Roosevelt's successor, William Howard Taft, was a grizzly bear all of his own, the largest ever occupant of the Oval Office. There are several songs making girth mirth out of him. My favourite is a parody. I've always said that the trick with parodies is to stay as close to the original title as possible. Alan Sherman was the master of this. You came a long way, old King Louie. When you walk through the park and get grabbed in the dark, that's a moron. The merest smidgen it of a revision, one word, better yet, one syllable, or best of all, one letter. There was a Saturday morning kids' cartoon history show in the late 90s called Hysteria, and to cover William Howard Taft, it chose parody, parodying the theme from Shaft as the theme from Taft, and that was just a beautiful comic idea, you know, the big soulful Isaac Hayes orchestration applied to the 27th president, and the lyrics stuck to the Isaac Hayes structure very tightly. How's it again? Who's the presidential one that almost weighs a quarter ton? Taft! Who is the dude with the golf and nap time attitude? Taft! Can you put it? And I don't know why. It was a wonderful song. And those Hysteria Saturday morning kids cartoon songs have never been released on CD or DVD. So instead, here's another comic song, because that seems to be the only kind ever written about Taft. This is from the Two Man Gentleman Band.
Oh, William Howard Taft had a great big smile, a great big laugh, a great big belly, great big thighs that slapped together when he walked by, measured and clean at a quarter ton. Made the Oval Office just fit for one. You can't sneak nothing past William Howard Taft. Oh, William Howard Taft got himself stuck in the bathtub, Secret Service and the police. Prime out with a tub of grease, he had a state dinner for the King of Spain, but nobody got to eat a thing. You can't sneak nothing past William Howard Taft.
You can't put nothing past William Howard Taft. You know, that would be a funnier song if it actually rhymed. Taft was followed by the comparatively emaciated Woodrow Wilson. Vic Chesnut died on Christmas Day 2009, apparently from an overdose of pills. A very popular songwriter, has a lot of big fans, but he actually wrote a song for real about Woodrow Wilson.
She said her father looked like Woodrow Wilson. Presiding from behind prescription lenses. She said her father looked like Woodrow Wilson. She said her mother act like the first lady.
Late Vic Chesnut musicalising Woodrow Wilson. Al Stewart is the British singer-songwriter, best known for his insinuating 70s Monsteroo, The Year of the Cat. A couple of years before that, he released an album called Past, Present and Future, in which, to live up to the first third of that name, he name-checks Nostradamus, Ernst Röhm and Stalin, among others. But the set also includes a song called Warren Harding, as viewed from the perspective of an immigrant worker. It's a strange choice of musical biography from a Brit, But Al Stewart did his research. If nothing else, the number will teach you the 29th president's middle name. And there's also a very broad-brushed period evocation, including a prohibition.
Don't go down to the docks tonight. The cops are nosing around in sight. Move the booze just before daylight. They won't find now it'll be your eye. One maybe a heartache. In Alaska running out of days. And even the latest God moves in strange ways. I just want someone to talk to.
Unlike the Sherman boys with Harrison, Al Stewart decided not to rhyme Harding, never mind, Gamaliel. That leaving the ladies line is a reference to Harding's supposed womanizing. And as for Alaska, Harding was the first president to visit the territory in the summer of 1923, and it was on the presidential train passing through British Columbia en route to Washington State that Harding became unwell. He died a few days later, and his vice president, Calvin Coolidge, was sworn in by oil lamp by his father, a justice of the peace, at their home in Plymouth Notch, Vermont. And that's, as I've often said, that's my favorite presidential site of all. Coolidge inspired a fair few songs at the time, Keep Cool and Keep Coolidge, that sort of thing. And he looks even better in hindsight. By 1934, Cole Porter was feeling nostalgic. You'll know this song, but this is the guy who wrote it singing it, Cole Porter.
You're the top. You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar. You're the nimble tread of the feet of Fred Astaire. You're an O'Neill drama, you're Whistler's mama, you're Camembert.
Cole Porter, you're the top, you're an arrow collar, you're the top, you're a Coolidge dollar. We will not see its like again, especially in an age when Washington, D.C. regards as chump change any figure that doesn't have at least 12 zeros on the end of it. The 30th president chose not to run in 1928, and history might have been very different if he had. For what's generally regarded as a failed presidency, the 31st has been a boundless source of inspiration to songwriters. Even the musical Annie, which is a very good-natured show, has a dig at him in We'd Like to Thank You, Herbert Hoover. And I'm Still Here, Stephen Sondheim's survival anthem for shuntoozies of a certain age, can always be confident of a knowing laugh when it gets to its Hoover lines. In a way, the imagery in this song is very good. Its choice of depression imagery is brilliant. And then wait until it gets to Herbert Hoover.
I've been through Gandhi, Windsor, and Wally's affair, and I'm here. Amos and Andy, Mahjong and Platinum Hair, and I'm here. I got through AB's Irish Rose, 5D on babies, Major Bose. Had heebie-jeebies for BB's Bathysphere. I've lived through Brenda Fraser, and I'm here. I've gotten through Herbert and J. Edgar Hoover. Gee, that was fun and a half. When you've been through Herbert and J. Edgar Hoover, anything else is a laugh.
Ah, but it's easy to be snide after the event when a chap's been designated as posterity's fall guy. So let's go with something contemporary. At the risk of turning this into an Irving and alternates medley, here's an Irving Berlin tune from the final year of the Hoover presidency. A depression picker-upper celebrating cheap and cheerful pleasures at the lunch counter.
Just around the corner, there's a rainbow in the sky. So let's have another cup of coffee, and let's have another piece of pie. Troubles like a bubble, and the clouds will soon roll by. So let's have another cup of coffee, and let's have another piece of pie. Let a smile be your umbrella, or it's just an April shower. Even John D. Rockefeller is looking for the silver lining. Mr. Herbert Hoover says that now's the time to buy. So let's have another cup of coffee and let's have another piece of pie.
Fred Waring's Pennsylvanians. But no matter how often Mr. Herbert Hoover said that now's the time to buy, Americans weren't buying. And in 1932, Franklin Roosevelt began his reign. Given that he's served twice as long as anybody else, we'll permit ourselves a couple of tunes. FDR inspired an enormous amount of song reference at the time. Although, as far as I know, Cole Porter was the only guy to attempt rhyming his name. The couplet went, "Buck Thomas, I suppose, felt he was helping Mr. Roosevelt." And yet, despite a not obviously musical name, Roosevelt turns up everywhere, including in a bona fide standard.
I like New York in June, how about you? I like a Gershwin tune, how about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. I like potato chips, moonlight motor trips, how about you? I'm mad about good books, can't get my fill. Franklin Roosevelt's looks give me a thrill. Holding hands in the movie show when all the lights are low may not be new, but I like it. How about you?
That's by Burton Lane and Ralph Freed. I like New York in June. How about you? And It's interesting to me that more recent singers who sing the song sometimes update the line about Franklin Roosevelt's looks. Bobby Darin used to sing, and Mr. Kennedy's looks. I don't know, to the best of my knowledge, no one has ever inserted a Republican president in there. So we're still waiting for, and George W. Bush's looks give me a thrill. Oddly enough, Frank Sinatra used to sing, when he sang that song, he always used to sing, and James Durante's looks give me a thrill, because he's a big fan of Jimmy Durante. But he was also a big fan of FDR. Everyone thinks, everyone knows that Frank Sinatra is Francis Albert Sinatra. And so people assume that Frank Sinatra Jr., his son, is Francis Albert Sinatra Jr. But in fact, that's not the case. Frank Jr.'s full name is Franklin Roosevelt Sinatra. He was named after the president, whom Sinatra was a great admirer of the time. Roosevelt was also the subject of a Broadway musical starring George M. Cohan. It was Cohan's swan song to Broadway, a fully-fledged Roosevelt musical called I'd Rather Be Right, and the songs were by Rodgers and Hart.
It's really a wonderful job for fellows like George, Abe, and me too. It's great to shake hands with a mob and to hold every kid on your knee too.
Yes, well, for reasons we now know, FDR didn't do a lot of that. The period songs about Roosevelt are not top drawer Rodgers and Hart, and they're a bit too obviously fawning for my tastes.
We entertained the royalty, but we were never flustered. We gave them Yankee hot dogs with Coleman's English mustard. Don't print it, strictly off the record.
That's true. When King George VI and Queen Elizabeth, the mother of the present Queen, went to visit the Roosevelts at Hyde Park, they were served hot dogs. Hot dogs, as Eleanor Roosevelt pronounced them. First time members of the royal family had eaten American hot dogs, and from the sound of it, it was the first time Eleanor Roosevelt had eaten one, too. For very arcane constitutional scholars of the British Commonwealth, the King and Queen were accompanied to Hyde Park by the Canadian Prime Minister, Mackenzie King, and various Canadian courtiers, because they were visiting the United States not as King and Queen of Britain, but as King and Queen of Canada. That's a very arcane Commonwealth constitutional point. Harry S. Truman represented a return to traditional levels of lyricizing, although he suffered through far too many rhymes with either human, or that was Irving Berlin, or inhuman, Ira Gershwin. I prefer Cole Porter in an utterly charming duet from a flop musical called Out of This World that I had the pleasure of introducing on stage in London some years ago. And it's sung in the show by Mercury, the messenger of the gods, and Chloe, the goddess of flowers. And like You're the Top, this is a catalogue song.
You may come a cropper, you're losing your breath.
Were I not so proper, I'd squeeze you to death. To continue, Truman's best ought to be you.
His success ought to be you.
All except Truman's press ought to be you.
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 Out of This World opened on Broadway in 1950 and flopped. The same year, Call Me Madam was a smash hit for Ethel Merman, and one of its songs played a big part in the Eisenhower groundswell. They like Ike, but Ike says he don't wanna. Don't wanna run, that is. And when the number helped persuade the general otherwise, Irving Berlin ditched the don't wanna line and rewrote it as I Like Ike, the only non-campaign song to wind up getting rewritten to serve as a real campaign song. But as I said, we've had a fair measure of Irving Berlin this week, so let's hear instead from J.B. Lenoir. He wrote Eisenhower Blues in the 50s, but his record company made him change it to Tax-Paying Blues. But look at what the song's saying. This is almost like a parody of a Depression song. And back then, in the Depression, with 29% unemployment rates, you could forgive an old blues singer for wailing that he had the Herbert Hoover blues. But America in the Eisenhower era, I mean, what's this guy's beef? It's not joblessness, it's not soup kitchens, it's confiscatory taxation. And the record exec's title change from the Eisenhower blues to the tax paying blues actually makes more sense. But out of respect to J.B. Lenoir, here's how he wrote it.
My money's gone, my fun is gone. Way things look, how can I be here alone? Fact. I'm only telling you people my belief, because I am ahead of speed already. I got them Eisenhower blues. Thinking about me and you, what on earth are we gonna do?
Yeah. You sing it, man. I'm way bluer over taxpaying than I'd ever be over Eisenhower. Anyway, Elvis Costello liked that song enough to re-record it in the 1980s.
He ain't got a dime, and he got a cent. He ain't got no money to pay Mary. Maybe he wants some clothes, she wants some shoes. I'm telling you.
Elvis Costello and the Eisenhower Blues, the original title, before it got changed to the Taxpaying Blues. And as I said, I'm way bluer over taxpaying than I could ever be over Eisenhower. Happily, his successor, JFK, cut taxes, but we don't remember that about him, do we? All Americans, it is said, remember where they were when they heard the news, but Lou Reed wrote a song about it.
I remember where I was that day. I was upstate in a bar. The team from the university was playing football on TV. Then the screen went dead and the announcer said, "There's been a tragedy. Unconfirmed reports the president's been shot and he may be dead or dying." Talking stopped, someone shouted what? I ran out to the street. People were gathered everywhere saying, "Did you hear what they said on TV?" And then a guy in a Porsche with his radio hit his horn and told us the news. He said the president's dead. He was shot twice in the head in Dallas, and they don't know by whom.
And shortly thereafter, the Camelot myth-making began, and the tax-cutting cold warrior was all but forgotten. The most famous lyric about Kennedy's successor was a jingle, "Hey, Hey, LBJ," but its opposition-crutching catchiness didn't prevent other voices from attempting to rock against Johnson in longer form. That grizzled old commie, Pete Seeger, took a slyer route. In the early 1960s, Len Chandler wrote a children's ditty that just sort of tickled the lower end of the top 40.
My mama said not to put beans in my ears, beans in my ears, beans in my ears. My mama said not to put beans in my ears, beans in my ears. Now why should I want to put beans in my ears, beans in my ears, beans in my ears? Now why should I want to put beans in my ears, beans in my ears? You can't hear your teacher with beans in your ears, beans in your ears, beans in your ears. You can't hear your teacher with beans in your ears,
beans in your ears, beans in your ears, etc. Pete Seeger, a couple of years later, just as the anti-Vietnam movement was getting going, added a verse.
Of course, you know, this is just like an old folk song. You can change around the words. It's what I call a zipper song. You can zip into it the names of anybody you want, your family, your friends, Mrs. J's little son, Albie. Hey, Albie J, you got beans in your ear, beans in your ear, beans in your ear. Hey, Albie J, you got beans in your ear, beans in your ear.
Albie J, get it? You see, Lyndon Johnson's got beans in his ears, so he can't hear what the people are saying. Is that really the problem? Well, in the early 60s folk boom, Pete Seeger did very well out of passing off childlike songs as imbued with wisdom beyond that of grown-ups. But there's a big difference between childlike and childish, and it's strange that the side of the aisle, so invested in the complexities of nuance, turns to kindergarten sing-alongs to make their point. In fairness, we should note that since his isolationist anti-Roosevelt songs of the 30s, Pete Seeger is an inveterate lefty whose songs have spent way more time attacking the two most transformative Democrats, FDR and LBJ, than the entire phalanx of Republican presidents put together. So for a grizzled old commie, he seems to do his bit sticking it to the Democrats. 37th president, well, any songwriter got anything nice to say about Nixon? Neil Young made him the surprisingly catchy hook of a song called Campaigner.
The podium rocks in the crowded waves. The speaker
Heavy Man. If Richard Nixon and Neil Young don't seem the most obvious double act, how about James Brown and Gerald Ford? In 1974, the Godfather of Soul penned this groover in honor of the Funkmeister of presidents.
We got to get together, buy some land, raise our food just like the man, save our money, do like the mob, put up your factory and own the job. We got to get older before we go under. Time it a jaunt. Lord. Country, do you know just what I meant? We just changed. We got a brand new funky president. I need to be the mayor.
Yeah, but the funky Ford flopped in 1976. And we got the Peanut Farmer. 2 decades later, Blue Mountain, a country rockish combo from Oxford, Mississippi, still looked back fondly on that halcyon summer of 76, enough to sit down and pen a song entitled Jimmy Carter.
Well, I said I'm never-
They mean it. If you've begun to detect a certain diminution in musical quality by this stage of our presidential soundtrack, I'm afraid I have to agree. There's more and more songs, but most of them will perplex listeners a century hence, if not 2 decades hence. We can still align the earlier tunes with the history books, but the scholars will have a hard time trying to match the Reagan presidency with the avalanche of Rock Against Ron dirges. Start with the Ramones, My Brain is Hanging Upside Down, Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, and work your way to the Minutemen's. If Reagan played disco, quote, he'd shoot it to shit, you can't disco in jackboots, unquote. The all but ubiquitous view of the artsy crowd was that the 40th president was a 40s president, a B-movie fantasist living out some Warner Brothers war movie role looping endlessly round his brain. Camper Van Beethoven put the received wisdom to music.
'Cause he's always living back in Dixon, circa 1949, and we're all sitting at the fountain at the five. Cause he's living in some B-movie. The lines, they are so clearly drawn in black and white. Life is so easy, and we're all coming along on this one.
'Cause he's on a secret mission, and on Reagan Airways, we're all doomed.
Angels' wings are icing over. McDonnell Douglas, olive drab. They bear the names of our sweethearts, and the captain smiles as we crash.
Of course he smiles. What does he care? Made it, Ma. Top of the world.
'Cause in the mind of Ronald Reagan, wheels they turn and gears they grind. A buildings collapse in slow motion, and trains collide. Everything is fine. Everything is
if any readers know any pro-Reagan songs, drop me a line. I'd love to hear them. As a palate cleanser, in 1952, Ronald Reagan made a film with Doris Day called The Winning Team, in which he played a baseball player called Grover Cleveland Alexander, and Doris Day played his sweetheart, Amy. That means that film is the only film to feature a guy with the name of a Democratic president played by a Republican president. Ronald Reagan plays Grover Cleveland Alexander. Anyway, over the titles, Doris Day sang Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And on her radio show, she promoted the film by having Ronald Reagan as her guest. And along with Bob Crosby, they performed the song. So here we've had lots of people so far singing songs about presidents. Here's an actual president singing, Ronald Reagan with Bob Crosby and Doris Day.
Take us out to the ball game. Take us out to the park.
I will play Alex the pitching great.
And I can be Amy, his sweet loving mate.
And I will be Rogers Hornsby. Fans still worship his fame.
Yahoo! So it's
one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Terrific. Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Doris Day, Ronald Reagan, and Bob Crosby, Bing's brother. The next guy after Reagan, 41st president, was kinder, gentler, bathed in 1,000 points of light, and a fat lot of good it did him. He attracted an extraordinary number of hostile songs, including this one, Bush Killer.
Y'all want to kill off the black man, but I know your master plan. So we'll see who stopped the black gorilla, P-Dog the Bush Killer. Bush killer. Yeah, tolerance is getting thinner, cause Iraq never called me nigga. So what I wanna go off and fight a war for? You best believe I got your draft card. So bad to hate somebody else, but much worse to hate yourself. Victim to the mental side of the devil. Why must black folk be made to die? Keeping them on and on.
George Herbert Walker Bush warming up the anti-Bush songbook for his song. I think I need another palate cleanser. Here's the 42nd president, Bill Clinton, who fancied himself as a musical talent on the saxophone. Here he is on a visit to Prague, jamming with some local musicians on My Funny Valentine. Bill Clinton. Guy who famously didn't reciprocate, that is Bill Clinton blowing his saxophone rather stiffly, I think, there on My Funny Valentine. Okay, I think we need a palate cleanser from the palate cleanser. This is Sheryl Crow's song Subway Ride, written in the depths of the Clinton presidency, the impeachment era of 98-99.
When I read the latest news, how we can't believe he wore no shoes, should we have the man? Or should we shoot him in the foot? Will you waste my time? You waste my time looking for two.
I love the spin she puts on that line about what is it? Newspapers trying to, quote, tell me what a loser I've elected. Sheryl Crow sings it with real feeling. As far as I can tell, there have been more songs written about George W. Bush than about any of his predecessors. We've got the legendary KO and George Bush Don't Like Black People, which of course we all know because he very cunningly appointed the first black first black Secretary of State and the first black female Secretary of State to throw us off the scent. George Bush Don't Like Black People, the legendary KO, American Idiot, Green Day, Sweet Neocon, the Rolling Stones, Let's Impeach the President, Neil Young, I'm With Stupid, the Pet Shop Boys, Rodeo Clown, John Mellencamp, Ugly Man, Ricky Lee Jones, Megalomaniac, Incubus, Moron, Sum 41, Idiot Son of an Asshole, No FX. I suppose technically Idiot Son of an Asshole is actually an anti-Bush Jr. and Bush Sr. song. But enough of this this mealy-mouthed tippy-toeing around the subject. Here's Bright Eyes and When the President Talks to God.
When the President talks to God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the President talks to God?
That's terrific, isn't it? When the President talks to God, Bright Eyes. I don't know, George Bush Don't Like Black People. It's extraordinary to me, after all the vignettes from two and a third centuries of American history captured in our presidential medley, that's what we've come down to, No FX and Idiot Son of an Asshole. It's tempting to leave it there as a bleak comment on the Republic, but of course George W. Bush was succeeded by the dawning of the age of the Hopi change. I said George W. Bush appeared to have racked up more songs than any of his predecessors. His successor was giving him a good run for his money, though, before he even took office, before he even won the nomination. There was Obama by Extra Golden. There was Black President by Nass. I chanced to be on Laura Ingraham's show when she introduced Stevie Wonder's a cappella song, Barack Obama, which consists entirely of the words Barack and Obama intoned multiple times with varying melismas. Barack Obama. No, that's Havana Gila, isn't it? Every time I try to sing Stevie Wonder's Barack Obama, I keep winding up singing Havana Gila, which seems to work just as well. Also, The Lion King. Barack Obama, what a wonderful phrase. And that day I was on Laura's show. I think that was also the day someone released Barack Around the Clock. I forget who did that. If you've ever seen the film Love Actually, you'll remember that the theme music comes when this clapped out rock geezer played by Bill Nye dusts off his forgotten 60s hit Love Is All Around, changes it to Christmas Is All Around, and cleans up big time on the Yuletime Hit Parade. There was a lot of that going on in the Obama songbook in 2008 and the run-up to the inauguration in early 2009. Ashford and Simpson grabbed their old song Solid as a Rock and turned it into this.
And for love's sake, he decided to make a promise to us all. And when he wrote the audacity of hope, we could make a change,
restore a higher plane.
We build it up
and build it up
and build it up, and now we're solid, solid as the rock, a strong foundation. That's what we've got.
Solid as the rock.
and ideas to consider. Calling all of us, we have to come together. Some may disagree, but in time you will see the truth in his words is gonna make it better.
Oh dear, oh dear. Time we will see the truth in his words. If I were George W. Bush, I'd figure I got the better end of the deal with ugly man, moron, an idiot, son of an asshole. What's interesting to me is that a mere year into the Hopi Change era, all that solid as Barack, in time we will see the truth in his words, drivel, sounds even more dated than Billy Murray in his wax cylinder from 1908 that we started with, if Washington should come to life today. So that does at least assure us that presidential fortunes change very quickly, and before the end of the Obama presidency, we shall have some very different songs to play from Solid as Barack.
Solid. Solid as Barack. Solid, 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 solid.
Solid as Barack.
But that's the journey we've been on. From If Washington Should Come to Life Today to Solid as Barack. 44 presidents in 44 songs, and that is it.
Mark Stein's Song of the Week is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises. All rights reserved.